It's Thursday again, tell everybody to lock in. Grab some popcorn, a drink, and go and throw your AirPods in. It's a 1 hour show, constantly speaking facts. Bulletproof stats are always shooting from Matt. And when it comes to Kyle, you getting numbers and style. Jake is gonna educate you, he has that knowledge on file. Player, step your game up, don't be sluggish or lazy. Or Jimmy J might hit you with a shaky baby. Catch him on YouTube or any podcast platform. Breaking all the news down like Shaq does the backboards. No hot takes, this is where the hottest debate's at. Now kick your feet up, cause it's time for Straight Facts.
What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to Straight Facts, the sports show that educates and entertains. Your boy Jimmy J, my guy Jake Galley. No stat Matt Robinson, got held up at work. Bigger duties at hand. We had to move. We're recording on Wednesday instead of Tuesday night, our normal day. So tried to move the day on stat Matt. Wasn't able to accommodate. We understand and we're sorry for that. But my guy Jake Galley is back after last week. He's back in full fledged as his Eagles bounce back. My Buccaneers are starting to leak. The ship is leaking. The ship is definitely leaking, and we have the Bills tomorrow night on national TV. So that's
Bills been shaky.
That's how my world is going. But both of us as Phillies fans, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that we are in mourning right now. We're hurting after Jake. I didn't realize. Now that we're a day removed from it, I didn't realize. One of the worst Philly sports collapses in at least recent history, if not all of Philly sports history. Like, that is, was it that bad?
I was trying to reckon this. Our guy ESP tweeted out his top five collapses, got me thinking.
Yeah, and they were all bad. And this one seemed to stack up with all of those ones that he named.
Here's why it's so bad is obviously you coming into the series are on 10. As a city, as a team,
couldn't tell none.
The stars are playing well. Pitchers are pitching well. And then the first two games, same as business as usual. Then games 3 and 4, they should win. It's really it really was like it was in phases of like they dominated. They had a couple games they let get away. Should have win. Maybe they eke out one in Arizona.
And they put up a 10 spot.
I mean, and then they close out with two of the most rollover. Let me show my belly. Let me get some belly rubs. I'm done. I'm on my back. Performances at the plate that I've ever seen. I mean, it's just sad.
When your top four hitters, including your two prize possessions, go a combined 2 for 20 something in the last two games or some crazy stat like that, you got no shot to win. You got zero shot to win. Nick Castellanos started the playoffs absolutely hot, went on a 1 for 21 spell himself. That you're just not gonna win like that. Came to a screeching halt. It's tough.
Well, let me give you two situations here. You tell me how, which I don't think either one are very likely. I think we probably end up running it back with a very similar built team next year.
If not the exact same team.
Right. Probably the exact same.
Yeah.
You have Reese, who could make a difference. Maybe not. Is he a free agent? I think he might be.
I think so.
And then you have Castellanos, who I could be wrong about that, actually.
No, Castellanos. Castellanos signed the 5-year deal.
Okay.
So he's got three more.
So basically, would you rather retool with like a money ball type approach with some guys who are not just out there to swing for the fences, which I think everyone basically beyond Marsh and maybe Stott is looking to hit a home run every single time.
Bohm's not either, but that's still not enough.
And I think, I love Rojas, but was a zero at the plate.
Yeah.
Or you pick one of the big four or five guys to get rid of, and then we collectively shove all of Philadelphia's money into a big pile and shove it towards Shohei Ohtani and see if we can get something going there.
Yeah, have everyone in the city donate like $10 and more than 100. Yeah, everyone in the city donate. Well, but there's about 3 million people in the city of Philadelphia. So whatever the math is to get to 500 million. Don't figure that out.
That's all that.
At this point, I think the Moneyball approach is too far gone. You can't. I don't think you could do the Moneyball approach with a $150 million man in JT, a $300 million man in Bryce Harper, a $330 million man in Trey Turner, and a $200 million man in Nick Castellanos. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think Moneyball, you'd have to build, you'd have to, I guess it would be Moneyball because you'd have to be Billy Beane in the start of it and get rid of all those prize possessions. Because that's how that movie starts, when he moves Giambi and David Justice, all those big money guys, and starts. Is that something that you would be comfortable with, you would want to do? Because at this point, it's not like we were those A's teams that had those big money guys and weren't tasting success. We're getting there. You know what I mean? It may be a few tweaks here or there, but I don't know if I can go Moneyball yet, because we're getting to the top.
Yeah, and you know? It's,
and we had 2-0 leads in all the, we had 2-0 lead in the World Series last year, man. Like, we had 2-0 leads in all these series. Like, it's not about not getting there. It's about holding on. Like, it's about finishing the job.
You're always going to, it's like they're the Warriors, but instead of the Warriors hitting at a 40% clip, it's like, you know, the bottom could fall out at any second. I think, like, yeah, the live and die by the three, live and die by the home run. It works in basketball. I don't think it works in baseball. We've seen. So, anyways.
Not when the bats go completely silent. That's tough, but I can never expect that. I can never expect that.
Happened 2 years in a row now.
All right. We're hurting, Straight Facts fans. We're hurting. I have nowhere to turn to. My new team in the Warriors lost on opening night to KD, Book, and the Suns. Mm. My NFL team threw up all over themselves against the Falcons. My baseball team fell off a cliff. What am I turning, Jake?
Well, there is some good football being played in the AFC, luckily, this year, as always.
Go ahead and pull me out of that. I was going to a dark place, man. Thanks for pulling me out of that one.
If you're an American, you must be interested in Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. Let me just shove it down your throat here. So we could start there, because the Chiefs have looked awesome.
They do. And we did the race at the top of the NFC last week, so it only makes sense we do the race at the top of the AFC this week. But right before we got on, you and I were talking about the reason why we did the race to the NFC last week is because there were 3-5-1 teams. Well, we look at the race to the top of the AFC this week, and there's a 6-1 team in the Chiefs, and then there's 3-5-2 Chiefs, the Dolphins, Ravens, and Jaguars. And I was saying the Chiefs, the first team we're covering, I was saying in my eyes, I don't know if they're head and shoulders 6-1 above the rest of this 5-2 pack. What like the optics would be in past years, where you're like, well, if the Chiefs are 6-1, everyone else is 5-2, it's only a matter of time before they take off. And you were pushing back on that. You were like, I don't know, man. They're really good. So present your case to everyone listening, because it was
so obviously without Stat Matt here, I had to back him up, get some DVOA presence in the
you did him proud.
Episode. So interesting stat that I saw scroll across my feed is the Chiefs are the first team to be top 5 in DVOA in all three phases, that being offense, defense, and special teams, as of week 7. Since the 1999 Rams, greatest show on turf, who won the Super Bowl. The other teams to have ever done that are the 1984 Redskins, the 85 Bears, the 90 Giants, 91 Redskins, and the 96 Packers. So of those 7 teams to have accrued this by week 7, all of them but the 1984 Redskins went on to win the Super Bowl. So I'm not, like, I don't lean all the way into, oh, well, this cookie cutter stat has said, declared them that they're champions. I don't really subscribe to that. But what I will say is it's indicative of, man, they can really score some points, and their defense is just good enough. And obviously now it's above average, above the mean, to where they can really shut some teams down as well. And it's going to be really hard to beat them with all the experience they have in the playoffs.
I mean, it, at the end of the day, would it just come down to that? Like, at the end of the day, it might just come down to, I've been here before. I've done this before. I know how to do it more and better than you do, especially the teams that are up and coming with them. With the exception of the Bengals, none of the top teams that they're dealing with right now have been there. You know what I mean? As good as Lamar Jackson has been, he's never been there. He's never been to an AFC Championship game. Tua and the Dolphins have never been to an AFC Championship game. Josh Allen has, but I'm not – the Bills aren't even in this race that we're talking about. Right. The Jaguars, Doug Peterson has himself. There's the experience there. But Trevor Lawrence and the battery and everybody else hasn't tasted that success. So they're in this field. That is, to me, the biggest – maybe I'll keep it in intangible instead of just the biggest factor. But it's the biggest intangible they have over all of these other teams of like, hey, I know what it takes to – sustain a race and keep it going into the playoffs, and you don't. You know what I mean? We could all even have the same records at the end of the season, but I know what it takes. I know what gear it takes to get to in the playoffs, and I know that we're not playing at it. I know that we can get to another gear. You don't. Like, maybe it's just, you know, they break numbers at the end of the regular season.
Yeah, and like, dude, it really is. When you stack it up, like, beyond the players, you look at Andy Reid, a guy who, you know, I mean, even a third of his career is more experience than some of these other head coaches have in terms of playoff experience. And then Mahomes as well, being in the Super Bowl multiple times. The one thing I'll say, and I don't want to skip past the Chiefs yet, but, you know, you look at the Dolphins and Mike McDaniel spent some time with San Fran, who had a lot of postseason success. Tyreek Hill, yeah. Jalen Ramsey, you know, was on a Super Bowl team. So, you know, obviously quarterback matters the most, I'd say. And I think your coordinators and coaches also matter a ton. But when I look at the Chiefs, you know, it's like year after year, you strip away a piece, you strip away Tyreek Hill or you add some injuries. And it just really doesn't matter. Like they have not been good in terms of their wide receivers. They have been very below average.
They just spun the block on Mecole Hardman.
Crazy.
And he comes back to their wide receiver room as their second best wide receiver.
All the way. I don't know if I'd go that. He's like
wide receiver. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is the only wide receiver who's better than Mecole Hardman. And the only other pass catcher better than him is Travis Kelce. Who else on the Chiefs? You put Sky Moore ahead of him?
I would. So one guy I'll point out. The only reason I know of him is because he's on my fantasy team and he's been a beast the past 2 weeks, is Rashee Rice, the rookie. Mm. He's actually had two good weeks in a row. The past 2 weeks combining for 9 catches, 132 yards, 1 touchdown in the 2 games. And like when you have, you know, Travis Kelce and you have a competent running game now to the point where, you know, you can win a game that way. I think, you know, you really don't need a ton more. And all you need is a guy to win on one rep. Patrick Mahomes is going to find him. It's like when you thought about, like, you know, the great, we started off talking about baseball. Like the great hitters, if a pitcher makes one mistake. It's costing you big time. So I think that they're in that zone right now where Patrick Mahomes and the offense is just so automatic that, you know, it really just might not matter who's running the routes as long as someone, if 4 guys running them, someone's got to get open.
That's a perfect segue to my next concept or thought about the Chiefs. Because you know who that reminds me of? That concept that you just said. Say that again. They're so automatic that almost doesn't matter who runs the routes. If they get open, they're going to find them and it's going to work. Who does that remind you of?
Two guys.
Give me one of them. Give me the one you know I'm thinking.
I get Tom.
That's wow. Tom Brady-esque, right?
Yeah, very.
And what I remember about those latter Patriots teams, those 2015 teams that are still winning Super Bowls, those teams aren't blowing teams out. They're winning. They're doing what they have to do, but they're not blowing teams out. It's almost like they're conserving, they're using the exact amount of energy they need to beat an opponent and then knowing that I don't have to. You know what I mean? 70 points is cool. That looks great. But that also, at some point, if I do that in a week, that takes a toll on my body. It's a lot. I can't afford to do that. So look at – and I look at how the Chiefs are winning games this year. They're not blowing anybody out. One, they lose to the Lions opening night. and then they beat the Jaguars by 8. Everyone's going to blow out the Bears. They blow out the Bears. They beat the Jets by 3. They beat the Vikings by 7. They beat the Broncos by 11. They beat the Chargers by 2 scores. But a close 2 score game. Like, they're not it's not a team that's going out and like beat it, like, you know, running it up on teams, you know, scoring 3-4 touchdowns on teams. And that's interesting to me. I'm not sure what exactly like to attribute that to, because I wasn't sure exactly what to attribute that to when I was seeing it with the Patriots. But it's a similar trait into what I saw with those teams. And it kind of goes to your point of being on cruise control to a certain extent. Like I'm sitting back and I'm just like, all right, if you score, I know I got to score. If you don't, I know I got to score one more time than you don't score. Yeah. And then if you don't score, then what? But if you score, okay, now I got to score. Like, that, you see, know what I mean? Like, I just know I got, at the end of the day, I got to have one more point than you. That's all I'm worried about.
It's like the, you know, I think when you think about a lot of great dynasties, they kind of go into cruise control. And look at the NBA. Spurs, Warriors.
But they were not, and you're right, because also in that, even in their 73-9, they weren't blowing teams out. They were, I mean, a lot of the times Steph wasn't playing in the fourth quarter. The score ended up looking respectable, but their average margin of victory wasn't like 20, 25 points. Like, they're winning by 8 to 10 points. Like, they're just winning the game.
And I do think it's, you know, somewhat of experience knowing that, hey, even if we drop this game, like, yeah, we don't want to. Obviously, we want to win every game. But we know what matters and when matters. And I think that they can rely on that, unlike a lot of other teams where, you know, every week you have to prove that you are the best. The Chiefs don't – not only do they not care, they don't have to. They already have. So
they also have the luxury of a division that refuses to rise up.
Yeah, that's sad.
Like, they won't even try. Like, they won't even try. And it's a division that we have welcomed the challenger as the football community. We've watched the Chiefs dominate, and we've said, okay, we're ready for the challenger of Chiefs Kingdom. The Chargers presented themselves. The Raiders presented themselves. The Broncos presented themselves. Like, it's been very disappointing to see them, I guess, deservedly so, not have any competition, because they probably would have beat them anyway. But there's really been no one who's like, their biggest competition has been outside their division and outside their conference. But you talked about a team who week in and week out has to prove that they're the best. The team that we're talking about next is amongst one of those teams in the Miami Dolphins, especially from the fact of putting up 70 and then losing to the Bills, who you don't know what they are. So I think Miami is still under that little stink of that Bills loss, and the I got to prove it every week is still in there, especially with a Mike McDaniel-led team.
Yeah.
Then you lose a tough one again to Philly on national TV, and, you know, now you're right back into prove it mode.
And I think that really different than a lot of the other teams that we talk about, their prove it mode is not even like I think because of all the smack that was talked on their quarterback and the controversial changes of head coach and, you know, all the speed that's been brought in and like you mentioned, like how they look, a lot of it is external. Like, it's not even that they kind of, I think they know they're good and they're kind of like, see, look, we are one of the best. And like,
them crapping out at the end of the season was just a bad look optics wise. And Mike McDaniel, the way that, you know, that I know we didn't have Tua, but the way that game kind of crapped out at the end of the to way that the season ended, I don't know. I didn't forget it.
No,
like Mike McDaniel wasn't injured. I didn't forget it.
It plays in too. 100% plays in. But I think, you know, looking at Tua, definitely took a step forward this year. Now that they're kind of, I guess, situated in the offense with Tyreek Hill, and Achane looks great, even though he's been out the past couple of games. Mostert looks good, and Waddle's yet to come along. But you have Tua, who is one of two QBs so far with over 2,000 passing. He's almost at 2,100. Him and Mahomes are the only ones north of it. 71.2% completion percentage. And then you look at like his receiver on pace to break Calvin Johnson's single season receiving record. And that's not like, oh, he's just going to break it because they have seven, they have another game. He's on pace to break it in the 15th game this year. So like, if they can click on all cylinders, which they weren't against, they did not against Philly, but if they can, they're as good as anyone.
Well, they're going to have to, Jake, because you know, they're first in points per game, they're first in yards per game, but they're also bottom three in those stats and a lot of other stats defensively. And this is a defense that's not supposed to be like that. And if they're going to be that bad offensively, they have to be the best, and they are, but they have to be the best week in and week out. The Philly game was a product of that. The Philly game was a product of, like, okay, our offense isn't terrible tonight, but our offense isn't otherworldly tonight. Our offense is beatable tonight, stoppable tonight, to throw a couple picks. Can our defense match that? Can our defense pick up where, you know, where our offense is lacking? And they haven't been ever. The only team that I've ever seen, and I actually thought it was going to come to catch up with them a lot, was those Chiefs teams, those 2018, 2019, 2020 Chiefs teams, where the defense was so bad, but Patrick Mahomes was beating teams in spite of that. Even Tom Brady sometimes was working with a top-tier defense led by Bill Belichick to help him, to pick him up some slack. When he won the Super Bowl with the Bucs, was working with a top-five defense all season to help him, to give him the ball back in certain spots. Tua and the Dolphins aren't working with that. And I'm not sure if – and to be honest, it's Tua. I'm not sure if Tua is good enough to win with a defense that's bottom three in all those statistics. Not a defense that's average. Not a defense that's, because that's all they may need is a defense that's serviceable.
You yeah, know what I mean?
It's if you're bottom three, like you can't, you're not ever helping your offense.
I mean, part of this is, it's important to recognize context. Go ahead.
Good, but look at the points they've given up. 34 to the Chargers, 20 to the Broncos. 20 to the Broncos is significant because the Broncos have played a lot of games and haven't scored 20.
Like the game was also pretty much over from Jump Street, though.
That's so true. Like, true. I think garbage 20, but it's 20. 48 to the Bills.
Bad, because the Bills haven't looked, you know, great otherwise.
21 to the Panthers. Who are 0 for?
You can't do that.
You can't. And 31 to y'all.
Well,
this is it. But this is a team who's given that's three or four games that I just named. They've given up 30 plus. And this is supposed to be a top tier offense or a top tier team. Not like that.
Yeah. Yeah. If they get held back, that will be it. That is what's preventing them, in my opinion, from me putting them up there with Kansas City and saying that it's not, you know, it's beyond just a one team and then the field, is that they don't have a dominant defensive force. And I think they can build one. I think Jalen Ramsey really makes a difference. Xavien Howard being healthy really makes a difference. And
for sure.
I think that they'll be able to get by otherwise, but when they face as good of a defense as they have an offense, which they did in Buffalo and they did in Philly,
yeah,
they're going to struggle.
And they're going to again in Buffalo. Yeah. Like they're going to play Buffalo again. And from the standpoint of, you don't have to have a top tier defense, Jake. You just have to have a serviceable defense, because you can win the Super Bowl scoring 30 to 35 points a game. You cannot win the Super Bowl giving up 30 to 35 yeah. points a game.
It's fair.
Like you can't, like both can't exist. If the 30 to 35 points is there, you're not winning. Like that has to be mitigated. You give up 20 points a game, cool. Like, you're probably going to win most games. But
all right. So then you tell me. So they're currently 5-2.
Right.
Next five games, home against New England, win or loss?
A win.
Okay. So they're 6-2. They're at Kansas City in Germany. That matters.
I'm going to say L to Kansas City.
I think you have to after the discussion we just had.
You know what I mean? But I also started by saying KC isn't head and shoulders. But I'm going to have to see the Dolphins beat them. The Dolphins beat them. Go ahead. Keep going.
They are home then against Las Vegas.
Win.
W. This one will be another interesting one for me. It's the first time they play the Jets. They're at the New York Jets.
Who do they have after that?
They're at Washington.
Nah, so no trap game there. No trap game there. No, that's a win for both of them. But I will say the Jets give them a good game. Like that defense will give Patrick Mahomes trouble, and just the grittiness of it. And I think that this isn't supposed to be the Jets discussion, but I think the Jets have figured out how to operate with a reined in Zach Wilson without, you know what I mean, letting him go out there and lose the game. Like, you know, they know how to do that. So that game's going to be close, but they'll beat the Jets, and then they'll crush the Washington. They'll crush Washington in a random 425 time slot.
We're looking at, you know, in week 13, we're looking at 9-3 week 12. Going into week 13, we're looking at a 9-3 Miami Dolphins team. Worth noting that the 6-1 Chiefs, we mentioned they play Miami. They also play right after that the Philadelphia Eagles. So in terms of, you know, locking in and tough stretches, that will be a very telling stretch, and it can ultimately shape who ends up at the top here.
Talk to me in a couple weeks about that Jets game. Yeah. Honestly. Yeah. Talk to me in a couple weeks. It's at MetLife.
They're building something.
They were. It was damn near
built. It was
built,
actually.
It was damn near built. And shit came crashing down. But we're going to be built next year again. Another one of these 5-2 teams. A team that I don't know how much they got to prove before people start to believe. But I'm pretty much there in the Baltimore Ravens. To me, a team that has now a clear command of the AFC North. I think the other teams are feel-good stories now. I think Pittsburgh, we're just looking to see if they can stay above 500. The Browns were in it for the P.J. Walker story now.
TU, baby, come on!
That's pretty cool. And I think the Bengals are sputtering too much that the Ravens, I think, at the end of the year, how the Bengals started will cost them. That 0-3 start is definitely going to cost them, especially where the Ravens are at right now. So they're 5-2. Lamar Jackson's looking good. They dominated. I mean, dude. You can't make Detroit feel any worse than that. Like
talking about a team that went 0-16
last week. You should have heard the way me and Matt were talking about them. And then it just went to absolute hell. So dominated Detroit last week, 10th in points scored, 1st in points allowed. Their defense is doing the damn thing, 9th in yards and 2nd in yards allowed. So they're all around great. Lamar Jackson, AFC Player of the Week for his performance against Detroit. This is looking like they're starting to look again like the Ravens that went 14-2 and Lamar Jackson was MVP. And it was the Ravens that were flying high.
Yeah, I think the tip of the spear there is always going to be the defense. And the defense has been, as you mentioned, awesome this year for them. Definitely a healthier defense than last year. And I think, you know, looking at some of the pieces that they had added since last year, Roquan Smith, the name was escaping me for a second, but has been a beast for them. And then on the flip side of things, and this is kind of the new page that they've turned, passing offense starting to look pretty legit. Passing offense starting to make some people shake in their boots. And, you know, not for nothing, a lot of people hate on Lamar for his arm talent versus, you know, how much he's able to add with his legs. Go ahead and look at that roster of receivers who he's doing it with. Mm-hmm. I like Zay Flowers a lot, and I think we'll get to him. He has been an emerging star. But my man's getting it done with Nelson Aguilar in the year of 2023. Think about that. I mean, Mark Andrews was there too.
And he wasn't supposed to be relying on Nelson Aguilar this year. That was not in the plan. That was not supposed to be going down. Yet he's doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, OBJ's there as well. I don't want to. Rashad Bateman. I mean, there are some names.
He's not relying on Nelson Aguilar, right, but he's using them.
I mean, and they've spread the ball around a lot. Zay Flowers, as a rookie, leading the team in receiving yards. Only one touchdown so far. So if you can get him going in the red zone, like, you're looking at a pretty high-powered offense, considering that the running game's always going to – the wood should have already been knocked on. Big ups to my man, J.K. Dobbins. Sorry about it. Like, that sucks. That actually does suck that, you know, you tear your stuff up again. But even without him, they're going to be fine. They're going to be able to run the ball. Lamar is still averaging over 50 yards per game, which is more than enough. And you mentioned it. It's a scrappy division, but it's definitely one they should be winning at this point in time. I mean, you look at the other teams, and there's no reason the Ravens can't clean that division up and maybe, you know, push the Kansas City Chiefs coming down the stretch here.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about the recent struggles the Ravens have had up until, you know, getting back to 5-2 this year. And what I was just looking up was their defensive rankings by, you know, each year. And you go back to, you know, the last year they had a lot of success, that 2019 season. They're third in defensive ranking, right? Only allowing 17 points a game. Then you start to go, you know, back over the years, they start to struggle. 2020, 2021. They're so far down, I don't even feel like counting. Like, I can't even find them. That we'd have to do that at a different time. But they're not high. 2021, 2022, same thing. They're not high. I think this is like the 15th or 16th team. Then you come back to last year, they're middle of the pack. You come back to this year, and they're where they're at. So I think it coincides with, you know, the success of the Ravens. Like, you think of the Ravens of old, just the traditional dominant teams, even the recent ones, their defense has always been, you know, a catalyst to their success. It's always been one of the anchors of their teams. And if I can look at the Ravens of past years and see their defense lacking, that definitely points to the Ravens lacking. And you want to give Lamar Jackson and the offense all the credit, and I absolutely want to, but I just can't ignore the fact that their defense, and that's something that John Harbaugh hangs his hat on. So something, you know, their defense that is, you know, complementing their offense in this way.
Yeah, they're efficient too. I look at their percentages, you know, fifth in third down percentage, 11th defensively stopping third downs. And then in the red zone, they're seventh offensively in red zone percentage, making sure that they score and they get down there. And defensively, they are second. Mm-hmm. So, you know, big plays when it matters, being efficient, those are things that, especially, again, the pass game is what will, in my opinion, set them into that next tier and really compete for a Super Bowl. But ultimately, it's like, it's about staying healthy. It's about keeping Lamar up and getting into the postseason with him. If we look at the next five games for them, I think you could make the case that they could go 5-0 pretty easily at Arizona, and then they're home for three games against Seattle,
Cleveland, Cincinnati. One of those is an L. And to be honest, I almost want to say Seattle is the loss because they're thinking about the division games at home, Cleveland and Cincinnati. Like, Seattle is almost a trap game. I don't want to disrespect the Seahawks because they're better than it to be a trap game. But I can definitely see the Ravens' focus being like, hey, we got two division games at home. Those need to be wins. And then so Seattle gets prioritized at third. If they were to lose any of those three games, it'd be Seattle. So I think they lose one of those three. Also, just really like Seattle as a team.
Then they finish it up.
At the Chargers. Let's not. Let's not this episode. I don't have it in me to spin the block on the Chargers right now. But okay, you project that 5-0 for the Ravens and look where that puts them. Right. The race is still there. Chiefs, we went through the next five games of the Chiefs, went through the next five games of the Dolphins, went through the next five games of the Ravens. Have the Chiefs clearly separated themselves in this race? That was my point to start. Even as we're going through and combing through the minor details of all this, they have not clearly separated themselves in this race.
To me, in terms of what's happening versus what I can expect, like, yes, in terms of what's happened, no, they haven't yet separated. They're game ahead. There's still some shaky waters in terms of who they have to play. But in terms of what I can expect, looking back on the past for those other teams compared to the Chiefs, I am much more confident in the Chiefs to be able to carry through.
They've literally beaten all of these teams head-to-head in the playoffs.
Wow.
All the teams we have on this list, they've beaten all of them in win or go home situations, every single one of them. So that's a little tough.
They did lose to the Lions where the Ravens busted up the Lions just now, but you know, week one, maybe we get
in win or go home situations. Win or go home. Yeah. He sent all the boys home. Pat sent all the boys home.
It's tough.
That's crazy. Including the last team that we'll finish this race with, but they're still in it, man. The Jacksonville Jaguars. A little shaky, baby, to start. But they're like rolling since, man. Late comeback and a tough win against the Saints. They bounced back from that 1-2 start, like I said. You haven't heard that their offense still hasn't completely clicked. And I'm not going to say their offense hasn't clicked because their offense has. Trevor Lawrence looks good. Travis Etienne looks good. Christian Kirk looks good. I would know because they're all on my fantasy team. You know who's also on my fantasy team? Mm-mm. Calvin Ridley.
He's screwing me so bad.
Who loves to have as many catches as the jersey number he wears. He's killing me, man. He has a third-round draft pick. He's killing me, man. So that's not clicking. And it, dude, the first two games, it clicked like that. And it hasn't since. I don't want to put that on their whole offense because Travis Etienne has 2 touchdowns in the last two games. Christian Kirk has scored in, what, 3 straight? So their offenses look good. Trevor Lawrence is not throwing the ball away. Evan Ingram is making plays. It's just Calvin Ridley. Why do you think that is?
It's a good question. I think somewhat of it, it's about familiarity. Players traditionally do struggle in their first year in new schemes and new offenses. Christian Kirk is his second year. Ingram, second year.
It's 2 years of football for Calvin Ridley.
Right. So I think that part of it is that. I think also in terms of what is being given to them, Christian Kirk is able to win very consistently on out of the slot and on inside routes. And, you know, same can go for Ingram.
You got to talk about Christian Kirk as one of the best slot receivers. Like that's not talked about and for years now. Like you with the Gabe Davises, the Tyler Boyds, that, you know what I mean? He might be leader of that where Calvin Ridley just graduated from, to be honest.
Like, yeah. Christian Kirk, leader of that back. You know, I think there was a clip of Tyreek Hill saying, like, you know, there's so many guys who could be in the top five of receivers. He's like, I got Christian Kirk in my top five. And people looked at him insane, like crazy. I did. But I think, you know, his point was, given the situation, the scenario, the role in the offense, they can put up big numbers. And that's exactly what he's been doing.
Well, you think of Christian Kirk, even when his career started. Behind Larry Fitz at the end of his career, you know, had to bloom into that role. Then D-Hop comes in all of a sudden. You're gonna go above D-Hop. Then you have a Hakeem Butler year where they try to make that work, right? We have a
Hakeem Butler was drafted. There was a year where they drafted like him, Andy Isabella, a whole bunch of other guys. But Kirk, you know, throughout all of that, I think the point you're making is. Absolutely. He was productive, and I think there was then that one year after D-Hop, I could be getting my years mixed up here, where he was the guy and then got all that money in free agency and people looked at him sideways, but it's just who he is. It's not, you know, it wasn't because of a bad team. He's a baller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, but I do see your point where you talk about the Jaguars. Offense hasn't clicked. Still have yet to have 300-plus yards in a game. That's a little alarming. 27 is a third down conversion. So offense and drives are starting to stall. So their offense is lacking in some ways, but their defense isn't. Number one in takeaways. And that's good because for a guy in Trevor Lawrence, he has many opportunities and extra ones as you can get. He's been good in recent weeks, but we know that, you know, it can be a slippery slope when you talk about Trevor Lawrence and turnovers when it rains, it pours for that man. for sunshine. How ironic is that? When it rains, it pours for sunshine. You know what I mean? So we have defense who has 16 takeaways already, you know, through 7 weeks of the NFL season is tremendous, and they're capitalizing on those. So you make up for all those drives that you're not finishing on third downs. You're getting the mulligan. You're getting the do-over for the takeaway. You capitalize on those drives, and, you know, all's well that ends well, maybe at the end of the day, maybe a net zero. So it's your defense. That's complimentary defense right there.
Yeah, shout out for you, Saad Aluakon, Ivy League grad. No. For you, Saad Aluakon. He has been a star for them. He probably won them the game. I mean, really, Christian Kirk did against New Orleans with his 44-yard touchdown at the end, but the defense scoring definitely helped. And you're right. Like that is what it has been taking to kind of sway games. And I don't think we've seen them in their peak form yet. They haven't broken 300 passing yards in a game. They will. And when they do.
To be 5-2.
Right.
I have a clear lock on a Pootie division. and you know what I mean? And to be contending for a top seed in the AFC and to not. There's something to be said of playing your best ball when it matters. Like, we're still winning and not playing our best ball. That would excite me if I'm a Jaguars fan. Absolutely excite me. Because that means we can only go up from here. You know what I mean? Yeah. They can only go up. Do the next 5 games of the Jaguars. I'm interested.
So, the next week, this upcoming week, they're at Pittsburgh.
Ooh.
That's a toughie. I think that's a win.
I don't know, man. The way Pittsburgh, they got some juice right now. They beat the Rams. Mike Tomlin's meeting Glorilla. If Glorilla at the game, they win it. If Glorilla at the game.
All right, we'll give them a one here.
That's an L. I'm sorry. That's an L.
So then you have the bye, and then after that you have San Francisco.
Bye is
going to
hurt them in the race. The bye is because the bye is like taking pit row in the race. They're going to lose a spot or two.
You lose some steam.
Yeah.
Then they come out of the bye against San Fran, probably a loss.
That's 5-4.
Then you got Tennessee, probably a win.
Done. Yeah. That's a get right game.
And then you are at Houston, which it's Houston not a beat them in week three.
Beat them thrash them. Thrash them in week three. Beat them by 20 in week three. I do think that's a revenge game because I do think Houston, a young team and a young coach, is through a schedule they're going to have to battle through, is going to look at a familiar opponent as like a, ooh, we beat them, like a, I know how to beat them type game. Yeah. And that's going to be the game where the Jaguars are, you know what I mean? If we're writing our projections at a 6-4, maybe 5-5 type range, where they're going to, like, every game from that end is going to matter. Every game from then on is going to matter for the Jaguars. That's going to be way more important for them. So I'm going to say they win that. So if it goes out the way I think, that puts them at 7-4.
Right. So, you know, could be better.
They lost the bye week hurt. The bye week is inopportune for them.
That Pittsburgh, this game against Pittsburgh coming up is going to be big for them. You're right.
Because I mean, that 8-3 looks a lot better than 7-4. In this race, 8-3. I mean, 8-3 and 7-4 is difference between maybe a home playoff game or not.
You got the AFC North, the two, you know, we mentioned the 5-2 teams. There's also 2-4-2 teams, Pittsburgh and Cleveland. So, you know, Pittsburgh game is much bigger than it seems.
Maybe as big as a week 9 game could get. A week 9 out of division game, that might be as big as it gets right there for the Jaguars. And a team that's good for them. You know what I mean? I'd say especially to follow up what kind of season they had last year, every week should matter.
Yeah.
We had a good Cinderella-esque run. You know what I mean? The way we came back last year and the way we kind of put up a fight against the Chiefs. But, you know, it's good that they don't kind of get to rest on their laurels and ride. You know what I mean? They already did that spinning their wheels to start the season. So every game should matter for Trevor Lawrence to them.
Well, by the way, we talk big about Justin Herbert, he doesn't back it up, we give him crap. We talk big about Josh Allen, he doesn't back it up, we give him crap. This is Trevor Lawrence. Sunshine. You had a lot talked on you, buddy.
Like, such vibe. Hey, I was the one talking the most because I actually remember, I'll never forget Trevor Lawrence coming out of high school. People, it's the next phenom, right? And I hated it for some reason. Then I saw that boy play one college football game. I saw him play one game. And I was like, that man is the absolute truth, dog. I still don't know if I've seen a college quarterback like that since. We got good ones since he's come out, but like they haven't been T-Law to me. So yeah. I was a huge Trevor Lawrence fan, and I'm rooting him because Urban Meyer tried to ruin his career from the jump. Mm. So like I'm still this to me, like this is Trevor Lawrence's second year.
Yeah. Basically.
This is Trevor Lawrence's second year. The first year was like a red shirt freshman year. Took his lumps and now he's back.
See,
but we'll see that race to the top of the AFC. We will monitor it because if everything goes to our projections, which it will because we're geniuses, then we'll have a pretty good race at the top of that AFC. And there are some teams, as Jake mentioned, that we didn't even get into who could be jockeying for position when it's all said and done. So we're almost out of time for this episode of Straight Facts. It was a great one. As always, we can get some shots up at the buzzer. Jake, give me a shot at the buzzer.
So I don't like always making these about fantasy. But there was some major, major controversy.
All your at the buzzers have been about fantasy.
So. I know. But this is bled into my
season. Tis the season.
So I'm in a 12-person league. I'm in five leagues, but like this is, you know, friends from back home.
What?
Yeah, it's two dynasty leagues. Then like they're all leagues, by the way. Basically, every single league is like a different format of scoring of like, you know, one of them's PPR, one of them's half point, one of them's standard, one of them. Yeah,
how do you
teams.
Look like this?
I want to cut. I have to. I'm getting out of one of them this upcoming year, at least.
Do you get leagues confused often?
No, but what happens is if I'm like 1-5, you know, you're not getting paid. There's no waiver wires being put in. I check Sunday at 12:30.
Yeah, make sure you're not embarrassing yourself. Make sure everyone in your lineup makes sense. Yeah.
So. In a league where I am 7-0, I have the top four running backs. I have CMC, ETN, Mostert, and Kyren Williams. Stacked.
You're eating off the block.
I mean, crazy. And I get hate for it because I am so far and above, you know.
And
I
you am seen as a 1%. Nah, you're annoying. You won't trade.
So I wouldn't until last week. I got to trade with someone who really needs a running back. He's starting Cam Akers and Jerome Ford. Yeah, okay, but like not going to cut it for a playoff team. I offer him ETN, Brandon Ayuk, and TJ Hockenson for Kelce and AJ Brown. Trade gets accepted.
Right.
We have in our league, you only need 6 out of the 12 teams to hit veto.
Yeah. We can talk about this veto thing. We could talk about the stupid veto thing.
No. Oh, my God. When I tell you for the next week, they vetoed it and I would immediately send it again just to annoy them. And we went back and forth. There were people in the league who said, yeah, you know what? It's a fair trade. I just don't want you to get any better.
Yeah.
I want to kill you in person.
And that is why. And this, yo, Jake. Trading and vetoing was a big debate in my league too, because it was opposite. People kept thinking I was trying to finesse people. And I was like, they agreed to I can't make them agree to the trade. They agreed to the trade. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not setting anything under their nose. So that's why, like, and there are people who said that to me too. Like, it's fair. Like, they'd be like, it's not a bad trade. I just don't like it for some reason. It just annoys me. I'd be like, what? Like,
that's
why?
Too bad. It's not your team.
The one person the only person who should ever get to veto my trade is the commissioner. And I actually think because he absolutely thinks like, nah, you guys are in cahoots or it's thrown. You know what I mean? Bro, no. All y'all do not get to. I don't even like that people can see my trades. I don't even like that people can see what I propose. You should get a Woj tweet. But you don't get to see the legislature.
It happened. He's on the team.
Yeah, you don't get to see the transaction. Dude, no.
It is so if you are in a league that has vetoes, you should try and change that in the offseason.
It's stupid.
Our commish just says, you know, I let the cards fall where they may. Try and convince people. I thought I had the numbers.
I hate that.
I thought I had the numbers and I started talking my shit. And then something went on behind my back. I think someone may have gotten their palms greased a little bit to put in the veto vote against me. So
that's grimy. And that's too much for fantasy football, dog.
But like, you know what?
Care that much, dog. If they want to trade, I don't care. If they want to trade people. I don't care.
You know what's sweet about it is I got a veto too. I have the power to veto too when they trade. And Lord and knows that, and I will be leading
toxic,
the charge.
Bro. That's what makes it super toxic.
I am toxic. Mr. Slime now. Like, oh my God.
I am the laziest active participant of fantasy football ever. I couldn't tell you one trade out in my league that doesn't involve me. I can't really tell you who's on whose team. When the matchups happen on a week-to-week basis, I don't know who's winning. I don't know who has the high score week-to-week basis. I know my record, who I'm playing that week, where I stand in my division, and waiver stuff. What's going on? I don't have time to spygate. I don't have time to send a drone to their practice and see what's going on their waiver wire. I'm sorry.
Belichickian, man. Be where your 2 feet are.
Boom. Be water. Yeah. Right? Be water. I am. Like, I am James. I am my team. And I deal with what affects me. But, like, I don't even know how to veto a trade.
Yeah,
I don't even know where to go to do that.
Are you on ESPN?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't even tell me. I don't want to know. I don't even know. Because I'm sure a bunch of trades have been going down that I probably would look at
and you'll
like,
have to.
Oh, I don't like that. Yeah, I don't love that. Ignorance is bliss for me, dog. Do you? And when you come to my front door, we shall duel. You know what's going on? You know what I mean? I can't do all that. My at the buzzer is, you would have loved my at the buzzer last week.
You sent the text. I forgot. I'll go back and listen.
I'll give you a synopsis because it was great. What my at the buzzer last week was that I was tired of the Jokic.
Oh,
stuff. I was tired of the fact that, like, he's openly admitting that he doesn't, you know, practice basketball, or he hadn't picked up a basketball summer, or, you know what I mean? That was, you know, a fun story for people, that was cute for people, that people were laughing about that and entertaining that, where a lot of other athletes, if they say they didn't practice their whole offseason, would get absolutely berated, championship or not. LeBron won a championship in the bubble, had to restart 2 months later, and if he would have said, I didn't pick up a basketball for those 2 months, people would have criticized him for it at 35 or however old he is at that age. Like, it's ridiculous. And so the second part of my at the buzzer was, NBA players have some freaking pride, and opening night didn't do it any justice, where Anthony Davis puts up a bagel with no cream cheese in the second half and they lose. So, and he puts up a triple double and they don't piece. So my second part was, NBA players have some pride. You cannot let this Michelin man shaped man,
Jabba the Hutt looking,
come back into the NBA season and continue to dominate when he says, I haven't been playing basketball. And the little PR spin that the Nuggets put out, the little media day piece about Jokic saying basketball is my life, and that ain't for nobody.
He got a gun to his head.
Nobody. And Adam Silver is probably the one, like, two-time MVP, say you don't like basketball. You know how hard it is to build this league, you Serbian bastard. Stop saying you don't like basketball. Like, so everybody else, the Embiids, the Giannises, the LeBrons, everyone who says and claims that they eat, sleep, and live basketball, especially the ones who haven't won a ring yet, the Damian Lillards, the Chris Pauls, the PGs. Like, please, man, have some freaking pride, please.
Well, I love everyone. Oh, Jokic is so unstoppable. I just find it very ironic that anytime he goes up against the other guy who's on his level and gets his you-know-what pushed in his you-know-where, everyone's... No one's watching that.
Yeah, no one's sorry. Well, truly, no one is watching it because it's happening on a random Tuesday night. Especially the one in Denver. No one is. You're the only one watching. The one in Denver. Yeah, we're the only ones watching in Denver. So yeah, I don't even want to. That was my with the buzzer for you because I wish you would have. I wish you would have been. It was a lot more emotional last week. I started to get there a little bit, but there was a lot more emotional last week. And
well, we will wait on.
I don't dislike Jokic the player, but I dislike Jokic the character. I do. I do.
Well, and his fanboys are just so insufferable.
I do. The character, it's old. Yeah. Care about being a basketball player. That's cool. It's, you know what I mean? It's cool to care to like basketball. I don't know why you want to portray that. No, I don't. When is the parade? No, I want to go home. What? You have the first championship in Denver Nuggets history, and you don't want to go to the parade? You know what?
I give him credit. He did look a little teary-eyed when they were putting up the banner. I think he puts on a front.
You can't fool me. Anytime, this is how I know something is authentic. Anytime you say a bunch of stuff in front of an iPhone camera, that's how you really feel. Because that's most of the time where you don't realize you're getting filmed or it's informal. When you got a Canon 420X80 in your face.
Got your makeup on from the makeup artist.
And NBC Sports is asking the question. Of course you're going to say you love basketball. That's when you're supposed to say it.
Yeah.
But when you caught on IG, you know what I mean? Are you caught on Snap? Are you using your MVP trophy as something to juggle in your living room? Or using it to polish the hooves on your horse? Like that's how I know you really feel.
Yeah.
So everybody else have some pride. That's all the time we have for this episode of Straight Facts. It was a great one. We missed our guy, Stat Matt Robinson. Hopefully he's back with us next week. Make that money though, Stat Matt. It's okay. Thanks for my guy, Jake Gallagher. Great for having him back. For those two, I'm James Jackson. These have been the facts.
Straight up.